Hi, and welcome to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Back at our microphones in sort of a joyous reunion, if you will, Reverend Yvonne Cooper. Reverend Cooper is a faith-based counselor. She is with the Allen Chapel AME Church. And the reason why we're celebrating is that Paul Trantham is a former offender as of today. Paul went before the parole commission and was released from our supervision today. And with all of the issues in the country regarding offenders doing well, successfully completing their terms of supervision. Well, we have somebody fresh from the parole commission hearing, and Paul Trantham, and to Yvonne Cooper. Welcome to DC Public Safety once again.
Thank you, Lenny.
And you know, one of the things, or the reasons why we talk about again is that they've been here about a year and a half ago. And in the show notes, I'm going to mark or show you how to get to their original show. And we can hopefully get a progression of how Paul has proceeded from that earlier show to today. But before getting into the interview with Paul and Yvonne, I wanted to remind everybody that DC Public Safety, we read every email that you send us. We take into consideration all of your suggestions. Feel free to contact us at media.csosa.gov, or go ahead and just simply search on your internet search engine for DC Public Safety. And my email address is listed there, or you can respond in terms of the response mechanism that's already there. We are now one of the top 10 websites for state and local government per Government Computer Magazine, and we are now well beyond a million requests for the show. So I want to thank you, the listener and the viewers, to DC Public Safety. And with that long and complicated introduction, Reverend Yvonne Cooper and Paul Trantham. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
How do you feel today?
I feel really good about myself and what I have accomplished over the years being on supervised parole, and I think I've accomplished a great thing today.
Well, I think you have too, because within the criminal justice system, Paul, as you well know, there's a lot of people who don't make it. You know, there's research from the Department of Justice that in essence states that about 66% of offenders are rearrested while under supervision, 50% go back to prison. Now, that's just for arrest, and for serious arrest as measured by the Department of Justice. If we included all arrest, and if we included technical violations, some people have said, well, that 66% number would go up to 85%, maybe even 90%. So a lot of people do not do well under their supervision, and you're one of the ones who have done well. So first of all, congratulations. You're a former offender. Reverend Cooper constantly reminds me, Leonard, that term offender drives her crazy, and she can have a chance to respond to that, and she'll give you her own reasons why as to this concept of offender. But that's how most people refer to people under supervision, Paul, and that's why I use the term. But I don't even have to do a permission slip for you today. You're free and clear of us.
Well, that's good. But let me touch back on something that you spoke on about individuals coming out on parole and returning back in. I once was like that, and I did do that myself, made that mistake of being actually on parole and caught a new charge and had to been returned back to prison because of alcoholism and narcotic abuse. Well, I told myself this time when I went back in that I wasn't coming back in these bars again, so the change started on the inside of that prison right then.
And I think one of the reasons why the program is important is to give people an understanding as to that whole sense of the change process. One of the reasons why Yvonne is so important to us is that she takes people under her wing who come out of the prison system and out of jails. And she, through the faith-based initiative, takes them under their wing and provides them with guidance, provides them with care. The faith-based community, I think, is a very important ingredient in terms of assisting people who come out of the prison system. I did an interview with the director of Prison Fellowship just a little while ago, and we called it a gang for good. Instead of coming back out and to the old friends, the old gang, it was the gang for destruction. This was a gang for good. That's how he referred to the faith-based movement. So you have to have that personal conviction. Okay, every offender that I've ever talked to, every person caught up in the criminal justice system, Yvonne's looking at me, who's been caught up in the criminal justice system, has basically said the same thing. Okay, so if you're not ready, there's nothing we can do?
I believe the individual must be, you know, They have to be ready. It's on them. You can do everything you would like to do to help this individual to see the other side of life or see that there's a better
life.
How
do you figure out who's ready and who's not? Because every person I've ever talked to in prison, every person says, yeah, man, I'm not going to go back. I'm not going to go back. And some of these people have been through a lot of programming. You know, and then when I ran group in the Maryland prison system, you would get a call from his wife, you know, 3 weeks later saying, Leonard, he's back on the corner.
Short and simple, you will know not by their words, but by their actions.
Well, but in terms, look, we got to supervise offenders. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people coming out of the prison system every year, between 650 and 700,000. That's not including the ones, the millions that are already out there under supervision. How do we within a criminal justice system make that miraculous discovery as to who's good and who's not? I mean, you know, their actions speak for themselves. I understand that. But at what point do you wait? How many times do you wait? 3 drug positives, 4 drug positives, 5 drug positives, not going to treatment, gone but not cooperating, employed but not successfully employed. At what point do you simply yank that person and throw them back in prison?
Well, what happened for me was, Lanny, I had to believe in myself. And once I believed in myself and told myself I was not coming back behind these bars ever again, you know, change automatically started for me. Now, far as for individuals that come out and start off doing good and then end up back in there for whatever reason it may be, well, if they need to communicate with their supervisor or whoever the parole officer is for them, and the parole officer must have an understanding to this individual, not excusing their negative behavior or negative actions. Now, if an individual comes to the parole officer or probation officer and tell them about a problem that they're having on the job or at home, and then the probation officer try to intervene and try to give them the best advice and help them counseling through counseling or helping them, and then they don't adhere to it, then it's the part of the parole officer or the probation officer that needs to make a decision whether or not this individual should remain in the street or be reincarcerated.
But and yeah, I know that. We all know that. What is the magic formula that we can use? And the answer is there is no magic formula. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, I had a very interesting case in Baltimore County when I worked for the Maryland system. And here's a guy, he comes out of prison, the wife lets him come home, and he's being a good father, he's being a good husband, he's going to work, he's going to drug treatment, but he keeps pulling positives for marijuana. Okay? Now, 1 marijuana, 2 marijuana, 3 marijuana starts, you know, that's one thing. 4 marijuana, 5 marijuana, I think you're talking about drug positives. We're up to 6 now. What do you do with that person, you know? So they get the, you know, they're reading this guy the riot act saying you're about to blow the whole thing. You know, there's a certain point where we have no choice to send you back to prison. 7 positives, 8 positives, 9 positives. You know, there's a certain point where you're just risking everything. Now, what had happened with this person is that we did intervene and the entire family intervened, and that's when he stopped. That's when he stopped. But if he had went out and committed a crime and the public knew that we knew that he'd pulled 9 positives for drugs and we didn't do anything with him and he goes out and hurts somebody, boy, they're going to be yelling at us and screaming at us, and it's going to be in the front page of the newspapers. That's what we in the criminal justice system have got to deal with. What I'm doing is trying to figure out from you, what can we do better? What should we do better in terms of dealing with offenders? Because virtually all offenders bring problems to the table.
Well, once again, I truly believe that it is on the individual themselves. Now, the question you asked me, what can you all do to better help the offenders? I believe in getting more deeply involved with the individual, you know, instead of giving so many offenders to a few parole officers, probation officers, you should have more probation officers where they can afford to have like 1, 2, maybe 3 offenders at a time. And I'm just saying that number, maybe a little bit more of them, where they can put a little bit more quality time into this individual that may can help this individual stay on the street. But once again, no matter how much one does for an individual that has come home and decides and wants to continue use, no matter how much you do, if they want to use drugs, they're going to use drugs. They'll get around the system. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I can remember when I was doing drugs back in, 2000, when all this began for me. Mm-hmm. I knew when to get high and when not to get high.
Right.
I knew what to come down to the parole officer and the urine. I knew my urine was going to come out clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I was totally dirty.
Right.
So it's on the individual. And, you know, I say that because I used to be a drug addict. I used to be an alcohol addict. So it's on the individual. Now, that's my only solution to helping individuals that are incarcerated that come home, and then talking to them, counseling, letting them know you don't have to come out here and try to obtain everything just like that.
Mm-hmm.
It took time for you to destroy your life. It's going to take time for you to rebuild your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take time for you to get the community to trust you again. And I won't say that they won't, because so many people have trusted me. You will not even begin to believe or imagine all of the trust that I have received from the community and from those in high positions,
mm-hmm.
nice jobs, and just have trusted me. And I have not violated that trust or betrayed their trust or belief in me. I believe that individual, once again, I'm strongly believing that it has to be on the individual themselves. You know, see SOSA.
Which is our agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Go ahead, please.
See SOSA, and anyone could, your parents, your pastor, they can do everything in the moon or up under the earth to try to help this individual
right.
to see the light.
Right.
But if this individual does not believe within themselves or is not ready, there's really not too much that you can do.
All right, let me ask you this. This organization, I won't ask you to comment on all 50 parole and probation organizations out there throughout the country. This organization, do you feel that, you know, I had somebody tell me at one point is that when we're having the same discussion, is that just be ready for me. When I'm ready to make that change, please be ready for me. Please be ready for those people who have made that personal commitment to substantial change. Do you think that we are ready? Do we have enough drug treatment? Do we have enough mental health programs? Do we have enough vocational programs? Do we have enough interventions to meaningfully help those people who do want to make that break?
Mr. Sipes, the answer to your question is yes. You all are more than ready. And the reason why, back in 1989, 1990, the judicial system wasn't as sensitive to individuals being incarcerated and coming back home. They showed where they could care less.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It was a revolving door, mm-hmm. and they could care less. Okay, if you violate or you mess up, you're going back in prison. That's it, and that's all.
Right.
But today, there are more programs for ex-offenders. There are more jobs now that would never hire ex-offenders, in my belief, such as mm-hmm. Metro. Metro mm-hmm. has hired some ex-offenders.
The subway and the bus system.
Right, the subway. Exactly, correct. DC. There are places, there are jobs now where you can go in, and unless they tell you, you wouldn't know it, but they are ex-offenders. They have been incarcerated. It might have been a right. minor misdemeanor,
right.
or it may have been a felony, but the bottom line is they're now in positions or working jobs that one time you would not see someone that was
an
ex-offender.
That's part of my contention of the fact that, you know, people feel that they are free of the issue depending upon where they live, whether they live in a low crime neighborhood in Washington, D.C., or whether they live in the suburbs. My contention all along is that anywhere in this country, if you live within a 15-minute drive of any major metropolitan area, you're interacting with hundreds of offenders every day. You just don't know it.
And you just don't realize it. You know, that's ironic you said that, because I said it last night to an individual. We was talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, unless that individual told you that they was a offender, or unless I told you
mm-hmm.
that I've been to prison, you would never know according to how I
not.
Act,
because
how I dress,
how you
and
act,
how
you
talk,
dress,
and
how you
language.
Carry yourself. That's exactly right. But you can tell in many cases, because some people wear it like a badge of honor. I don't know why they do what they do, but some people just scream, I've served time. Correct?
Well, you know,
and what's all that about?
Some do and a lot don't. You know, I believe that the reason why, you know, at one time it's ignorance. You know, I would even say it's the epitome of ignorance to want to say that, yeah, I've been locked up and, you know, I've done time for this. You better check my record. I don't need to check your record. You understand? I don't want to check your record. I mean, what can you do for society today? And what are you doing for society? You're not locked up now. So
what are you doing for your kids? Because 60 to 70% of people coming out of prison have kids.
Exactly. And, you know, what were you, by the time you was incarcerated, what was that young lady going through? How was she struggling? How was she making it to take care of your child and, you know, the kids? So, you know, I would not, me personally, I'm not ashamed of being locked up because I don't think that God sends anybody to prison, but he will allow you to go to prison. And once I went to prison, I realized for myself that I'm not no jailmate or jail material, and I cared enough about myself to not be sitting in behind these bars. I thought enough of me as an individual, as a person, as a human, you know, that this is not my life. This is not what I would rather be out in the street, walking the streets, than to be incarcerated in a room where I could not move by my own will,
and
free will.
My only dilemma in terms of all of that is that so many people that I've known throughout my career have said the same thing, but still end up with the needle in the arm, still end up snorting, still end up thugging, and still end up back in prison. So that's always the fascinating thing to me as to you, what an honest-to-God success case. You and Yvonne, I mean, you set the perfect example for what it is that we could do, should do, regarding individuals coming out of the prison system. But the tragedy is that there's a lot of people who simply get sucked back in to the lifestyle. And that's always puzzled me as to what the difference is to those people who don't get sucked back into the lifestyle and people who do.
Well, for me, Leonard, what helped me and what encouraged me, and I have to give respect and acknowledgement to those that supported me the entire time that I've been out in the community. I'm not going to say the streets because I'm back into the community.
Good.
You know, number one, my church. Yes, thank God. Number one, my church, my pastor. The first pastor that believed in me was Reverend Lipscomb. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another pastor, minister, reverend is Reverend Yvonne Majette Cooper.
Who's by these microphones
and will be right beside me.
I've never seen Yvonne so quiet in my life. Go ahead.
And who sits beside me, who not only guides me, but she has become so comfortable and favoring me that one day she called me and she said, I don't want you calling me Reverend Cooper anymore. Mm-hmm. I want you calling me Mama.
There you go.
Or Mother Cooper.
There you go.
And at first I had a hard part doing that because of my background about my family, my personal family. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I thought about it and I said she has been a mother figure with me. I also want to thank my pastor now, my present pastor at Allen is Michael E. Bell Sr. Yeah, and he has encouraged me and supports me as well as I'm his steward. You know, a lot of people have placed I'm going back to the trust part. A lot of people has put a lot of trust in me, even so C. Sosa. I want to thank them. They have called me and asked me to be a mentor to people that's coming out of prison.
And you're being a mentor right now to so many people. I mean, I'm going to go over to Yvonne in just a couple seconds, but the key issue for me is, by the way, in terms of the question, do we have enough resources here at CSOSA? My answer is going to be no. I believe that there should be more drug therapy that we control, more job placement, more mental. You know, 50% of offenders coming out of the prison system nowadays are claiming mental health issues, and that's something we should be doing more about. If you can't find a legal place to live outside the shelter, I would like to see us have some capacity for having a legal place to live. So you're being kind, I think, in terms of do we have all, and we're one of the better equipped parole and probation agencies in the country. We're probably the shining star of an example in terms of all the programs we have. My heavens, we have this whole hospital wing that we control, that we built in terms of helping people, the really hard cases, escape that life of drugs and crime. So we do a lot, but in my own personal opinion, we could be doing a lot more.
And let me be clear on you with that. And I still stick with the answer, yes, because the simple fact, a lot of the programs that you have now available to ex-offenders mm-hmm. coming out, you did not have back then.
Yeah, I agree. Okay?
So that was the reason why I say y'all are doing great right now. Yes, we can always do better for and helping individuals right. that come out of prison and try to keep them out. But I return right back to the same thing I originally said in the beginning. It depends on
it starts with you.
The individual.
Got it.
And for me, you know, I want to touch base on this mental issue, mental health issue. Mm-hmm. You know, when I went to jail, they tried to say that I had a mental problem just mm-hmm. because I wanted to defend myself in jail. I wasn't going right. to let nobody beat up on me. I right. didn't go to jail as a punk, and I ain't coming out as a punk.
You ain't nobody's punk.
You understand?
I got that, yeah.
So therefore, they wanted to give me drugs, mental psychotropic drugs, because they felt as though I had a problem. Well, Mr. Lenny, and I don't boast about it, but, you know, I've been home since 2003, and I'm not on one psychotic drug.
Right. You're not even,
you know what I'm saying? And I haven't committed a crime, and I've even stopped smoking. When I was October the 1st of 2000, 6:45 a.m. in the morning, and I stopped smoking cigarettes in jail.
And you're doing a
and
lot.
I've gone through a lot of stuff out here that would cause a lot of people to return back to smoking
right.
and everything, but I have not decided to, and do not have no intention of ever going back to smoking cigarettes. So like I say, I'm going to stick with it. It depends on the end of it. If you choose to want to do it, then you do it. Accept the responsibility.
Got
you understand?
It.
But
okay,
okay,
we're
going
to go. We're going to go over to Yvonne. Boy, Yvonne, you've been quiet throughout this whole process. I've never seen you so quiet. Tell me a little bit about Paul, give me a little bit of history. Now we only have about 9 minutes left in the
That's
program,
fine.
But give me a little bit of history and the chemistry between you and Paul. And did you feel that when you first met Paul, that Paul was a done deal, that Paul was going to succeed, or Paul needed work?
Well, first of all, let me say I've been sitting here just beaming, smiling from ear to ear, so very, very proud of Paul. And mm-hmm. yes, he is my son. Mm-hmm. And he knows I'll go upside of his head if he doesn't call me Ma,
mm-hmm.
because he's like a son to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I first met Paul, Pastor Lipscomb introduced me to Paul, and I was skeptical. I'm skeptical even today as I meet people who come home from prison. I know people were skeptical of me when I came home from prison. And it did not mean that I was not going to give Paul a chance. And I did give him a chance. But, I didn't close my eyes. I kept my eyes open. One eye open all the time, watching him, trying to see him and figure him out. And he truly, it didn't take him long for him to prove to me that he is somebody that you could truly trust. And mm-hmm. I'm so excited that Paul mentioned the fact that he's a steward at our church. It takes a big to-do to be called a steward at an AME church.
Yes.
And he is a steward, the pastor's right-hand man. The pastor trusts him with not only his the goings-on of the church inside, but with his family and other issues as well. And so Paul has really stepped up to the plate, and I'm very, very proud of him.
Tell me a little bit about the faith-based initiative quickly, because the power of the Gang for Good, when I did the radio show on prison ministries, we both described it as a gang for good. I mean, a lot of people, when they come out of the prison system, they want a group experience. And that group experience, 7 times out of 10, is your old buddies, is your old friends. I mean, hanging out on that same corner, doing that same stuff is reinforcing. It's embracing. It is something familiar. It is, you know, it's really hard for people to give up their old friends. The faith-based community, whether it's the Islamic community, whether it's Judaism, whether it is Christianity, the faith-based community seems to have this magical formula for helping people cross that bridge from tax burden to taxpayer.
Well, you know, you asked earlier to Paul, what is that magic thing? How many times do you help this person out that keeps going back and forth in the prison, making it appear to be a revolving door? Well, when you deal with the faith-based folk, particularly Christians and Judaism, Jesus said, and he was very, very clear, how many times are you going to forgive a person? Well, he said 7 times 70, however many times it takes. we're going to have to make sure that we allow the person an opportunity to do the right thing.
But the criminal justice system can't do that.
Well, I don't know what you mean when you say that.
There's a certain point where if the person screws up, makes a certain amount of mistakes, there's a certain point where you got to do something.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the faith-based.
I understand.
I'm talking about faith-based. I'm not talking about the criminal justice system.
So there, the faith-based folks can intervene, and in some cases, far more meaningfully than we can intervene. The faith-based community can come in and say, yeah, he's got three positives. We're going to have to retriple, if there is such a word, our efforts to help him kick this issue once and for all.
And you talk about three positives. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, the biggest problem that people have today, those that are incarcerated, is drugs. And you hit the nail right on the head. They keep coming back because they keep relapsing. And if they relapse, well, then they're going to go out and do things that a druggie will do. And so if CSOSA would identify more drug treatment programs, because there's a lack for them.
Mm-hmm.
We need more drug treatment programs. Today, a person goes in, they get 7 days of treatment at detox here in Washington, D.C., and they're out the door. It's no place for them to go.
Or if they go into, this is the national experience, that if they go to treatment, it's cookie-cutter treatment. It's not designed for that individual.
Correct.
And at most, it is outpatient and twice a week in terms of a group setting.
Sure.
A lot of people need a lot more than that to kick drugs, and that's just the hard, cold reality of the research.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct about that. And I'm conscious about the time as well. But just to piggyback on this issue concerning what you just said, and just related to Paul, when Paul came home, from an adoptive family. He was a foster care kid, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't have the kind of structure or love that you might have grown up with,
mm-hmm.
or the structure that I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to surround Paul with love and let him know that we loved him, we supported him, that we care for him. A lot of these people in prison today, and I'm speaking from experience, not just having been there, done that in prison myself, but from working with those that have come home now, a lot of these people have not even had a hug from someone. I ran into a young man who was 17 years old who was pressed about getting a hug. And I'm saying, why do you want a hug? I learned later he raised himself since he was 7 years old. He had never had a hug.
And that's not unusual.
No, it's not.
And I understand that the overwhelming majority of people caught up in the criminal justice system have a similar experience.
Yeah.
And you know, we're talking about raising themselves, early onset of alcohol use, early onset of drugs.
Absolutely.
You know, getting involved in the lifestyle very early. And
yes.
I'm talking about 9, 10, 11,
yes.
12, 13. So they don't know what to come back to. So that's my point in terms of the faith-based community. Government cannot offer that welcoming structure. Government cannot create this gang for good. Only the faith-based community is in.
You're right, Lenny. And you know what? I think I might have mentioned this before. If I'm redundant, well, it needs to be said again. It is not really the government's responsibility, in my mind's eye. It's the faith-based community. Excuse me, the faith-based community's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, there were in biblical days, there were cities of refuge that were put in place when a person committed a crime, and this was in the biblical days.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, after the cities of refuge, then there was penitence that was put in place by the Catholic Church. You did something wrong, you have to pay penitence. Then after that, you move along. It was the Mormons that put in place the first penitentiary. So in my mind's eye, Lenny, it's the church's responsibility, not the government's. It's a good thing the government's helping out, but the church needs to step up to the plate. And I'm talking to all those that might listen to this, all these church-going folks, the pastors, the bishops, the elders, whomever it might be. It is our responsibility as a faith-based community to help those that can't help themselves. I'm talking talking about the least, the limited, and the lost. Someone like Paul, praise God, that did not fall through the cracks because he had somebody to help him out. But it's our responsibility. But certainly the government have a few dollars, so y'all need to do a little something, something more.
And I'm not going to disagree with that. But, I mean, here's the bottom line behind this. Paul's not out there thugging. That means people are going to continue their lives without being victimized. I'm going to guess that Paul's transformation is saving government hundreds of thousands of dollars instead of us putting him back in prison, maintaining him in prison, building the prisons, following him up on the community supervision, providing him with the programs. I mean, when a person crosses this bridge, it's just not a matter of a person crossing the bridge. We're talking about very, very, very concrete benefits. And Paul, I'm gonna end the program with you because we are just about out of time. One of the things that you're doing now, by the way, you're a circulation manager for one of the newspapers here in town, correct?
That's correct.
And what's the newspaper?
The Washington Informer newspaper.
Okay. And I guess that's a pretty good feeling, being a circulation manager, and you have all that responsibility, and that'll give you a chance to move on to other things sometime in the future.
Yes, it's a stepping stone for me, and I really appreciate and have much respect and love for my boss to entrust that I can manage her paper going into the community.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I have other individuals that call me and ask me to circulate their material,
mm-hmm.
and they trust me. As a matter of fact, I received a job last night. The lady said she expressed her boss really appreciated how I distributed her material and recorded and gave her back the information
right.
when I said I was going to do it. Then also, I've had other jobs. I used to be work for Safeway, and I used to be a Starbucks manager there.
Right.
But I started off as a courtesy clerk and build myself up and walked
right.
up the ladder.
Right.
So as I go back to it, like I said in the beginning, there were a lot of people that trusted in me, had faith in me, and helped me to also, the belief that I believed in myself helped me to continue to believe that. And my self-esteem has built and built and built now until I don't look at the negative. You know, people have helped me and talked to me about don't focus and don't dwell on the negative. Just dwell on moving forward in your life. So, you know, and like I said, I have to commend C. Sosa for allowing me to speak on a radio podcast show. And I have to commend you and thank Mother Cooper, not Reverend Cooper, but Mother Cooper,
mm-hmm.
for walking with me. This
mm-hmm.
journey has not been easy. She knows the majority of my lifestyle and what has gone on with me during the course of my time in the community. And I can't thank her enough for what she has done. And last, what I would like to say, even though I'm no longer on supervised parole or probation, I still want to volunteer my time in helping ex-offenders that come out of prison, if that means mentoring or going different places, talking to individuals, letting them see that, you know, it is real, that you can make it out.
And I find that it's not unusual in terms of a lot of people who come out of the prison system who make good, want to volunteer their time, want to give back. And I find that to be interesting, and that's a fairly common experience. Paul Trantham, first of all, congratulations. You're off of our supervision. We're no longer on your back. You are now a free and complete person. You have had a miraculous journey, and I'm so happy, tickled pink, that you have made this journey. Congratulations to you. And Reverend Yvonne Cooper, faith-based court counselor and connected with the Allen Chapel AME Church. Yvonne, thank you for
thank you, Lenny.
Being there for Paul and the other offenders. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. My name is Leonard Sipes. I'm your host. Again, if you need to contact us, it's media.csosa.gov, or just go ahead on your internet search engine and search for DC Public Safety. I want to wish everybody a very pleasant day.